They say miracles are past, and we have our philosophical persons to make modern and familiar things supernatural and causeless. Hence it is that we make trifles of terrors, ensconcing ourselves into seeming knowledge when we should submit ourselves to an unknown fear. William Shakespeare, All's Well That Ends Well.
I know the story, you see. I'm writing it all down for you, so it'll be remembered. Rusticello of Pisa.
The evening of June the 28th, 1794. Witch Cross, England. It will be another century before Roderick Burgess purchases this manor house, but the building, square and gabled, already has links to the occult. The light which can be seen in the upstairs room comes from the reading lamp belonging to Lady Johanna Constantine. She sits at her desk, reading The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire by Edward Gibbon. She is dressed in a white gown, its bodice low, its waist high. Her blonde hair falls in waves to her shoulders. Apart from the desk, the room is simply furnished with a four-poster bed, a washstand, and her chair. Upon the walls hang large, valuable, and occasionally erotic paintings. There is a movement of air and a shimmering of light.
Who?
Lady Johanna is alarmed, but she remains calm. She is a Constantine, and hard as nails.
Who's there?
Just outside the circle of light cast by the lamp stands a figure in a large black coat, its arms folded.
You are Lady Johanna Constantine, are you not?
Sir, I will call for the servants.
Your servants sleep, milady, but we are old friends, you and I. We met in a tavern, Johanna, 5 years gone. At the time, you believed me a demon. Have you learned differently since?
Yes, I have. If you are who I think you are...
I am.
Then what would you with me, sir?
Morpheus of the Endless, the Lord of Dreams, wears a black high-collared frock coat and cravat pinned with a red ruby. He is bareheaded, his black hair pulled back and tied with a velvet bow. His eyes are dark pits with points of light for pupils. His expression is serious.
There is a task I need accomplished. I cannot involve myself directly in the matter. It is a family affair.
So you need a mortal agent?
Yes.
Is it dangerous, this task of yours?
Yes, extremely so.
What are you offering me, then, to risk life or mind for you? Gold or property?
No, milady. Birth has blessed you with a surplus of both, and I have neither.
Then what?
I will give you what is in my power to give you, Lady Johanna Constantine.
Then I agree.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 9, Thermidor.
Paris, France, July 24th, 1794. Of the revolutionary calendar, 6th Thermidor, year 2.
Hundreds sent to Madame la Guillotine, more like thousands.
I do not doubt it. The Montagnards do as they will.
The streets of Paris are dangerous to walk at night. The sans-culottes, unkempt citizen guards in their white shirts, red, white and blue striped trousers, and red liberty caps are on every street corner, bayonets fixed to their muskets.
Citizen Robespierre has the Committee of Public Safety at his beck and call.
But which of those heads belong to the enemies of the revolution, and which were simply enemies of Robespierre?
Shh! You'll be next with that tongue of yours. This woman could be one of his spies.
This one? Hardly. You! Over here!
Citizen?
What's she carrying?
The woman is dressed as a peasant sans-culotte, with apron, jacket, dress, and wooden sabot clogs. Under a white cloth cap, her hair is short, raggedly cut. She carries a sack containing something large and roughly spherical.
Good evening, citizen.
It is Lady Johanna Constantine, and her mother would hardly know her.
Stop right there, citizeness. You're out very late, are you not?
Is it late?
Where are you going, huh?
And what do you have in that sack, eh, citizeness?
I have a room in an inn here in Montmartre, citizens, and I have nothing in this sack that would interest you.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! It's a hungry business, this. We've been hoping that some food might pass by that we could liberate. A ham, perhaps. Or a cabbage. Open the sack.
Really, it is of no consequence.
That's for us to decide.
Very well. There, my gallants. Satisfied?
Oh, vile thing.
Her dirty hand is holding up a severed, chalk-white head by its jet-black hair. The neck is ragged. The eyes are closed. The mouth slightly open.
That's a strange trophy for a young citizeness to possess. To whom did it belong?
This! This Aristo swine violated Anne Claire, my little sister, 3 years gone. He had her, and his men looked on and laughed.
It happens.
The poor little thing took leave of her senses following her ordeal. Last winter, she hanged herself. When I heard that this monster had been brought before the Committee for Public Safety, I walked to Paris, and I persuaded Monsieur Sanson to give me his head. I will take it back to my village, where my poor old mother waits for me, and I will show it to her, and she will spit in its rotten Aristo face, like this. And then I will place it on little Anne Claire's grave, and I will leave it to rot.
Quite a story.
Guillaume, let her be. She's a madwoman, a ghoul.
Let her be? Your eyes are as dull as your wits, Michelle. Come here, my pretty. Come nearer to Guillaume. I wish to inspect your head more closely.
But...
Quiet.
What have you seen?
A fine gold earring, which somehow the executioner's missed, and is now ours.
That is a find.
But, monsieur...
Oh, this will buy many ham hocks, many cabbages, and many bottles of wine. Thank you 1,000 times, my pretty. The next time you have treasure to donate to the people, please come down this road also. Put that thing back in its sack and be on your way.
Yes, monsieur.
Oh, Guillaume, why do I ever doubt you?
Because you have nothing between your ears but feathers and chicken droppings, my friend.
Ah, sahira, sahira, sahira. Les aristocrates, les lanternes. Ah, sahira, sahira, sahira.
Lady Johanna's lodging in Paris consists of a badly furnished room in a small inn lit by a rank and smoky tallow candle. There's a small window, a broken-down bed in one corner, and a wooden chest with a water pitcher and bowl on it. Tenderly, she takes the head out of the sack and rests it, neck down, on the chest. Taking out a surprisingly clean lace handkerchief, Lady Johanna washes the spit from the severed head's face and the blood from its torn ear.
I am sorry.
The head opens its eyes and speaks.
It cannot be helped. The earring will bring him nothing but misery, and eventually it will come back to me. It has been stolen before now. Frankly, madame, I am more concerned about what they will say to their superiors. The word will be out soon to look for a young woman with a head.
With two heads, sir?
Yes, with two heads.
We can't get out of Paris until tomorrow morning, when the city gates are opened. Oh, damn me for a fool, sir. I wish they had not seen you.
But they have, m'lady. And we must think fast, else we are both as good as lost.
Aye, Master Orpheus. Well, they do say that two heads are better than one.
Indeed.
I'm afraid I don't have a fresh sack.
The soldiers don't arrive until early the next morning. They practically pull the room apart.
It's no good, Captain. It's not here.
Evidently. Where have you hidden it?
I do not know what you're talking about.
Citizeness Bonchance, we know that you had in your possession a something. Where have you hidden it? Talk to us, my little cabbage, or Madame Guillotine will steal your tongue forever. The crowd will sing the Carmagnole as your face tumbles into the basket.
I do not know what you're talking about.
Talk, or I'll eat your brains and shit in your skull.
Where is she? Where are they? Ah, Captain. Good day.
Citizen Saint-Just, good day.
Louis Antoine Saint-Just is 27 years of age, well-dressed. His dark blonde hair touching the high collar of his frock coat, he is Robespierre's trusted ally and thus, probably, the second most powerful man in France. A pleasant enough man to converse with, Saint-Just has helped send thousands of people to their deaths.
Well, have you found it yet?
Not yet, but leave me and a man alone with her for half an hour and she will sing like a nightingale, I promise you.
Yes, you would enjoy that, wouldn't you? But no, I'm afraid not, my friend. You and your men stay here, search the house, search the neighborhood, keep searching. The lady, on the other hand, comes with me.
But, Monsieur Saint-Just, my orders are...
Do you wish to debate this with the Committee of Public Safety, Captain? Because if you do, I do not doubt the revolution will continue without you.
I did not mean... Your pardon, citizen. Please, take her. We will continue to search.
The pistol really is unnecessary.
In the carriage, if you please.
Where are we going, then?
You are going to the Luxembourg Palace, lady. Drive on.
Yes, citizen.
I thought you kept the Luxembourg for political prisoners, not for poor country girls, unjustly accused of stealing something, I know not what.
But Monsieur Robespierre tells me you are no country girl. And Monsieur Robespierre knows many things. Still, rest assured, citizeness, you will not stay in the Luxembourg long. After all, the law of Prairial gives but two verdicts for those who trouble the state. There is acquittal, or there is death.
Yes, the same law that excuses the committee from hearing any defense evidence, Monsieur Saint-Just.
Liberty is a bitch who must be bedded on a mattress of corpses.
Is that original Louis Antoine?
Perhaps. Jeanne. Robespierre thinks you are a spy and a thief.
What do you think?
I think I was very foolish to make love to you. Fortunately, Saint-Just is above losing his head over a woman.
Louis, you could let me go. Just tell the driver to turn his head, and you would never have to see me again.
Jeanne, I will hate to see your pretty red blood spatter the shriveled old tricoteurs as they knit beneath the guillotine. But you see, my pretty, I'm a realist. I believe nothing. But Monsieur Robespierre is a visionary. He believes. He truly believes. And if I betrayed him, then Saint-Just would lose his head over a woman. See how hospitable we are, Jeanne? We give you a palace to live in.
Very droll, Citizen Saint-Just. Wasn't this where Madame de Berry held her notorious parties?
Many have held court here.
Halt! Who goes... Oh, it's you, citizen.
At ease, citizen. The Luxembourg was built for the mother of King Louis XIII.
And now it's a prison for kings, aristocrats, and anyone who has offended citizen Robespierre.
The Council of Public Safety must use all available resources to protect its citizens against the enemies of France.
No more banqueting and debauchery here, then.
No. Still, unless you tell us what we need to know, you will not be living here long enough for the lack of amenities to trouble you.
Hey! Saint-Just!
A moment. Monsieur Payne.
Thomas Paine is in his mid-50s. He was born an Englishman, but his belief in the rights of man has made him influential overseas, not just here, among the rival factions who have commandeered the French Revolution, but 20 years ago, during the struggle for American independence. Now imprisoned by Robespierre's Montagnards, Paine looks thin and careworn. But even in jail, he continues writing. With ink-stained fingers, he beckons Saint-Just over.
Is there word from America yet? Am I to be freed?
Word? Why should there be word, Mr. Payne? You are an embarrassment to them. The only way you will walk from here is when you begin the journey that permits no returning.
How many people have your damned committee sent to their death in the last month? 10,000? 20? This reign of terror is an evil, monstrous thing, and your master, Robespierre, is the most monstrous of them all.
What is it you declared not so long ago, when your own adopted country declared a revolution?
Oh, spare me.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of men and women. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet, we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph.
Yes.
What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value.
Thank you.
Your words, Thomas Paine. We do what is necessary for freedom and for liberty. If heads must roll, then so be it.
What I wrote then is still true. But you have perverted the spirit of revolution, twisted it, mirrored it into something foul and profane.
This is France's revolution, Payne. We do not need foreigners meddling in our affairs. France flies the flag of liberty, and citizen Robespierre is our standard-bearer.
Aye, and you're his lapdog. Well, when he is toppled, as all tyrants must topple, you will fall with him, Saint-Just, and that is a comfort to me. Woman, your face seems familiar to me. Have we met before? In America, perhaps? Or in England?
I get around, monsieur. You know how it is.
We must go.
Then go you must.
We have wasted enough time, and I have much work to do. Come. He was meant to have been guillotined last Cantidi. Some fool erased the mark on his door that should have told the guard to take him. But Payne will not live to see the end of the month of Thermidor. The Americans will be as pleased to see him dead as ourselves. Payne is useful as a rabble-rouser, but rabble-rousers are needed before revolutions, not after. Citizen Guard, is this cell occupied?
No, citizen. The Archbishop was executed this morning.
Open it then.
Yes, sir.
In here, my little one.
Will you kill all the poets then, Saint-Just? Will you kill all the dreamers?
When they have served their purpose, yes. Fabre d'Eglantine devised our calendar, and he died with Danton last Germinal. Goodbye, Jeanne. Whoever you are, I fear I will not see you again. But then, this is something I have by now accustomed myself to, and I do not allow it to trouble me.
The cell was once a medium-sized bedchamber. The sun shines in through the tall casement window, which is barred on the outside. The floorboards are bare and stained. The walls are covered in graffiti. It's dirty and empty, save for a pile of straw up against one wall and a large cracked chamber pot. Lady Joanna Constantine pushes a strand of damp hair from her forehead.
Ah, me.
From the Journals of Lady Joanna Constantine, Volume 6, May 1793 to January 1795. British Library, sealed shelves.
Thus it was I found myself immured in the Palace of Luxembourg. My plight was not cheerful, and in my younger days I might perhaps have dropped a few tears in the tumult of my senses. But I had been hardened by the years, and was content to wait. It is forever a matter of amazement to me what trifling consolations the mind will seize upon in times of misery. Myself, I sought refuge at this extremity in tabulating what I had so far accomplished. I had crossed the Channel without incident, and I had, with ease, made the acquaintance of Louis Saint-Just. As I have remarked earlier in these journals, those who consider themselves the stronger sex are, in many matters, more tractable than children when their passions are to be gratified. In short, men have a fund of gullibility, and, as my readers must by now have gathered, one I have never shrunk from exploiting when it met my purpose. Saint-Just imprudently told me the whereabouts of my quarry, little realizing to whom he spoke. Thus it was not long before I had betaken myself to the crypt and gained myself of what I sought. Where there is life, there also is hope, they say. But my death waited for me then, in the Place de la Révolution, at the edge of a weighted blade. And at that time, and in that place, I could foresee no way to avoid it. These bars are new. But the window will open enough to admit some air.
She looks down into the palace courtyard. There's an unused guillotine in one corner. Nearby is a small crowd watching a marionette show of sorts. The puppets are human corpses, a bloody decapitated male and female, torsos and limbs strung with rope to support their dead weight. Fresh from the scaffold, they are made to dance. When rigor mortis sets in, it will be cast aside, and fresh victims strung up.
Indeed I can, sir, for I have no head to see him with.
As the decapitated cadavers perform their macabre dance, the door of Lady Johanna's cell opens.
Ah, mademoiselle. You watch our little puppet show, hmm? It is amusing, is it not?
Hardly.
Robespierre, a short man and something of a dandy, in a bottle green frock coat, stands in front of the open cell door, which is blocked by a large, unsmiling bodyguard. As he consults a small notebook, Lady Joanna Constantine imagines him as a charismatic rat. Robespierre is the kind of person who is so completely sure of his own rightness that normal people, who cannot decide what is true and what is not, tend to be swept along in his wake.
Now let me see. Your name is not Jeanne Bonchance. It is Joanna Constantine. You are the only child of Lord George and Lady Harriet Constantine. Your twin sister died soon after your birth. You have never married. Popular rumor has it that your true father was Sir Francis Dashwood of the so-called Medmenham Monks. You are 32, you speak perfect French. Ah, but then you are the protégé of the so-called Chevalier D'Eon, exile, spy, and enemy of France. And he, or she, has taught you well. Oh, goodness, it's hot in here. D'Eon taught you French, taught you something of espionage. And if these reports are to be believed, taught you the art of successfully cross-dressing. You have been positively identified as the young English captain involved in the theft of certain papers from the Russian imperial court in 1786. You were certainly involved in the illegal freeing of slaves in Louisiana 3 years ago. And you were also in Egypt, where you narrowly escaped being strangled as a witch. You are now in possession of something that belongs to the people of France, an object of superstition and decadence. I want it back, Mademoiselle Constantine.
Good day, Citizen Robespierre. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, please. All the information I have been given tells me that you are an intelligent person. Do me the honor of respecting my intelligence also. My men gained access to the crypt this morning. They found that someone else had broken in hours before them. The box was opened, the head was gone. But only Saint-Just and I, and Citizen Sard, of course, had known the head's location. I spoke to Saint-Just, who told me of his country girl lover, who had been asking questions. Two soldiers told us of a woman and a head. We found you. We did not find the head. Where is it?
And what would you do with the head if I told you where it was?
I would destroy it utterly. And I will. We are remaking the world, woman. We are creating an age of pure reason. We have taken the names of dead gods and kings from the days of the week and the months of the year. We have lost the saints and burnt the churches. I myself have inaugurated a new religion based on reason, celebrating an egalitarian supreme being, distant and uninvolved. Don't you understand? I will not have an object of superstition at large in my country. Whether it is some magician's trick or some plot of the infernal Mr. Pitt, it matters not. If it threatens France, then it is my business.
So I have seen. You will save France if you have to kill every child, woman, and man in the country to do it. Tell me, little citizen, have you ever slept with a woman or with a man?
We will find the head, woman, and you will help us find it. You have tonight to think further on this. And then...
You gesture towards the courtyard as if that has any significance for me.
Well, mademoiselle, being a featured player in a puppet show is not the worst that could happen to you. There are worse things, many of which do not involve dying first. Good day to you, mademoiselle. I will see you later. If you change your mind, then you may send a message to me. At that point only, you will be given food and water. In the meantime, my men will keep searching. After all, how long can a head remain hidden?
That night, lying fully dressed upon the pillow of straw in her moonlit cell, Lady Johanna Constantine sleeps. And as she sleeps, she dreams. In her dream, Lady Johanna, dressed in a formal gown, her hair piled high upon her head, walks in a bleak landscape where leafless trees push their black limbs up to a grey sky. Nearby, a torrent of blood falls like a waterfall into a river of flowing gore. Beside it stands Morpheus, clad in a heavy black cloak.
You are having problems, I see, Johanna.
Yes, I am. To put it mildly, can you... will you help me?
A raven circles overhead, but Morpheus's face, grave and beautiful, stays fixed on hers.
Not directly, no. I wish that I could, but I may not be seen to intervene in this matter.
Well, sir, might I suggest you give the matter some thought? Your son's head is valuable to you, and I am attached to mine. Indeed, hitherto we've been inseparable. Now it appears both heads may be lost.
Morpheus crouches at the river's edge. He dips a hand into the bloody river. The raven perches close by.
Sire?
Yes, Jessamy.
If I might make a suggestion, sire, your son knew many songs. If he were to sing.
You might have something there, Jessamy. Orpheus still has power, but for that to be effective, he would need a chorus.
A silver goblet appears in Dream's other hand. He pours the blood into it and offers it to her.
Drink this, Joanna. It will keep the waking world from stealing this meeting from you. Remember my words, lady.
I shall.
Very well. Now, listen.
Came to me in a dream. It was so obvious, so blindingly obvious. Where do you hide a book? In a library. Where do you hide a flower? In a garden. Where do you hide a severed head?
Robespierre leads Saint-Just and Lady Joanna Constantine down one of the winding stairways which lead to the Paris catacombs deep under the city. His bodyguard brings up the rear.
Saint-Just, the door, please.
Yes, citizen.
Where do you hide a severed head?
You tell me, citizen Robespierre. You tell me.
You hide a severed head amongst other severed heads. Hide it with the corpses that have not yet made their journey to the lime pits.
There. Oh, it's open.
Now, mademoiselle, I have answered your question. Please, enter. I have a favor to ask of you.
The pile of severed heads comes up to waist height. There are 20, 30 more. The heads of old men and young men, old women and young women, rich and poor, eyes frozen open and eyes closed. Each head has been neatly severed at the neck. Some of them look fresh and almost healthy. Others are beginning to bloat in the humidity, eyes bulging. It is the stuff of nightmare and horror.
Oh, phew! What a stink! Meat does not keep well in this July heat. Thermidor. I meant Thermidor.
Lady Joanna, will you do me the courtesy of introducing me to your friend?
Monsieur Robespierre. Even now it is not too late. You can let me go. I will take what I came for and leave France and never bother you again. Remember this, that I offered you one final chance to let the matter lie.
Oh, mademoiselle, your attempts to threaten me are laughable and pathetic. Give me the head.
Very well, citizen. This is the head of Orpheus. Orpheus, who descended into the underworld to bring his wife Eurydice back from the realm of the dead. Orpheus, whose head, this head, was ripped from his living body by the Bacchante, the women of the frenzy. They used their bare hands.
She holds the head up before her, pointing it at Robespierre. The skin is corpse pale under its dark hair. The eyes are closed.
They threw his head into the Hebrus, and it is said that it still called the name of his lost love as it floated down to the sea. This is the head of Orpheus, who bested death and who now cannot die.
Do you take us for peasants, Johanna? The myths are dead. The gods are dead. The ghosts and ghouls and phantoms are dead. There is only the state and the people.
No, Monsieur Robespierre. There is much more than that.
Oh, enough of this nonsense.
She places the head of Orpheus on top of the pile. It is as dead as all the others. As Robespierre gives orders to his guard, she places her hands over her ears.
Henri, Bring me that head.
But, monsieur, its eyes have opened.
What? Now, Messire Orpheus, sing to them.
Triuthoiado eman ton bono din libin. Aptos pumisun to clamabo athikan mes din thikin don thimon.
My ears were covered, but I could not entirely obliterate the sounds the head made as it began its song. The head sang first of blood, of the baying, senseless cries of the mob, of the worm that devours its own flesh. Then it sang of freedom, of liberty, of love. And as it sang, other voices were also raised in jagged unison, the voices of the dead.
Eleftheria Irinia in Thetha Bethanun Otikenaini.
The entire pile of heads is now singing.
Eleftheria Irinia in Thetha Bethanun Otikenaini.
Lady Joanna keeps her hands over her ears.
The ghastly chorus sang of those who lead, of those who, by virtue or circumstance, are raised above the crowd, who manipulate the commonalty, will they or nill they. It sang of a dream and of the ending of the dream. I am not able to conceive what it must have been like to hear that song unprotected. Monsieur Saint-Just and Monsieur Robespierre and their manservant stood and listened like statues, like men entranced. The song ceased, and still they stood there.
She walks to the pile of now silent heads and picks up Orpheus's. Saint-Just and Robespierre remain fixated, catatonic, frozen.
And taking what I had come for, I left that place.
Oh, steady, Destrier. Halt, who goes?
Oh, my apologies, Chevalier. I'll borrow your coat and hat. Yes. Good, and thank you for the loan of your horse.
Johanna Constantine left Paris shortly after dawn on that day, 8th Thermidor, year 2, with the head of Orpheus gently cradled on her saddle. In the National Convention, the Assembly of Deputies, events moved swiftly to bring the terror to an end.
Fellow Jacobin, deputies of this great...
On the 9th Thermidor, Louis-Antoine Saint-Just, the great orator, faltered during his speech before the National Convention and fell silent. While Lady Joanna, disguised as a soldier, galloped across the fields of France, the sack in front of her on the saddle, to the place where she had hidden her true clothing.
Citizens! Citizens! Allow Citizen Saint-Just a chance to speak! Are we not?
In the National Convention, Maximilien Robespierre, the most powerful man in France, attempts to restore order. Until this point, he has been listened to with awe, or fear, or silence. Now, for the first time, he finds himself laughed at and also for the first time. He is lost for words. That night, he and his faction are deposed and arrested. And during the arrest, Robespierre is shot in the jaw. Or perhaps he fumbled a suicide attempt. The truth here is a matter of conjecture. It is, however, a matter of record that the next day, his shattered jaw bound by a paper bandage, Robespierre watched Saint-Just step up, silently, to the guillotine. Not far off, Lady Joanna Constantine, now dressed as an English noblewoman, climbed into a stagecoach, carrying a large leather bag.
What is our first stop, coachman?
Dijon at nightfall, and the Swiss border by the next night.
Excellent.
Would you like your bag stowed on the roof, citizeness?
No, thank you. It's far too precious.
And it is also a matter of record that, at the very last, Monsieur Sanson, the executioner, ripped off the paper bandage that had held Robespierre's jaw together. And that Robespierre's final wordless scream of pain was cut off with his head by the fall of the weighted blade. The terror died with him. September the 9th, 1794. Naxos. A temple stands on a hill, surrounded by olive groves, with the blue, transparent Aegean Sea far below, stretching to the horizon. Lady Joanna Constantine stands with a priest in a white robe. In the priest's hands, facing her, eyes open, is the head of Orpheus.
The priests will take care of me. I stayed on this island for many years before I was stolen. It'll be good to rest once more. And my mother still comes by, from time to time.
Very well.
Joanna?
Yes.
Will you see my father again?
I would hope so. After all, there is still the matter of my fee to be discussed.
Joanna, he must care for me. Do you not think so? If my father did not care for me, he would not have had you rescue me.
I do not know.
I trust that he will repay you adequately for your time and trouble in assisting me.
What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly, Orpheus.
True. But when you see him, tell him I miss him. I have not seen him for so long.
Not even in your dreams?
Not even in my dreams. Take me to my resting place, priest.
Yes, Lord.
Orpheus, I travel widely. Perhaps in a year or so I could return to Naxos, see you again. What do you think?
I do not think that would be a good idea, Joanna. Goodbye.
I never saw him more. But as the years have passed, I have, on occasion, seen him in my dreams. And from that time on, the song of Orpheus has always hovered at the edge of my perception. A melody I can never truly recapture, try howsoever I will. And do not doubt that there are many in authority to whom I would sing it if 'twere within my power.
Triuthoiado eman ton bono din libim. Tos pumisun to clamabo athikan mes din thikin don thimon. Then xerum bode nastama disun. Cosmos horis logiki don thimondu, cosmo dos kuliki botraete.
Seeking those